That's up there in things I wouldn't do again.
The other woman was a root canal.
One more time for people in the back.
He was spitting.
Yeah, because it's, you know.
Look, sorry, can we, I did actually mean that. Can we have it one more time? We just wanted to hear it.
Okay, right. You might just like.
Have you ever wondered if your brutal breakup was written into a book, how an English student might analyse it?
Or if your life had a genre, would it be a romantic comedy or more like a body horror?
If you had to describe your boss, are they a misunderstood main character or a true Machiavellian villain?
These are the questions that we're constantly asking ourselves as former English students.
Because the way we see it, a plot worthy of great analysis doesn't just have to come from a novel, it can come straight from real life.
My name is Alice.
I'm Sophie.
And I'm Emmeline. Together, we co-host Out of Print, a culture podcast with a literary twist.
The three of us met as raucous freshers at university, and whilst we spent a lot of time reading Virginia Woolf, we did spend just as much time studying Britney Spears.
And as a result, we've got into the bad habit of analysing everything from pop culture to our own lives as if the plots, characters, and settings of real life were like those of a classic novel.
So we're finally putting that habit to use in this podcast, where we'll be discussing everything from books to hookups, from 18th century autofiction to the morning after debriefs that knocked us for six.
In each episode, we'll take it in turns to bring in a text and match it with a hot topic. The text could be anything, from a Substack article we really liked to an old English poem we had to study at uni.
And whether the topic is politics, linguistics, or modern dating, rest assured that the analysis will always be backed up with some hairy stories from our own lives.
So to summarise, we'll be comparing plays, poems, and novels to Hinge messages and hangovers and pop lyrics in an attempt to close read our lives along with the pressing cultural topics of the era.
Please do come along and validate all of the student debt that we have spent on our degree.
Because we're not just doing it for the plot anymore.
Is that not like the whole premise of the show?
Alice!
How is everybody doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Moving and shaking.
I think I'm a strong 8 out of 10 today.
Oh, Alice introduced it. Can I bring... Alice introduced a really good metric system.
Yeah.
What did you say to me the other day?
What punctuation mark are you today? Like, if you're a piece of punctuation...
I think I'm an ampersand.
Oh, the...
The and symbols?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Why?
I just feel like...
It's a bit extra.
Yeah, it's a bit extra, isn't it? I just feel like I'm rolling about, moving from one thing to another. I'm still recovering from my weird Wednesday.
Yeah.
You need to hear about this.
What happened?
I was in the studio, and we'd had a good session. It got to like 7. We like feeling a bit thirsty. So naturally went to get a pint. Dangerous to get pints in threes always, because you go round for round.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you're 3 pints in, you never really have 3 pints and think this is a great place to stop.
No.
I've never felt like that ever. So then we did tequila shots.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And then the bar was closing. It was like, I don't know, 2 when it closed. 1, 2. And we went out into the street and we were all getting an Uber home. And then this older, quite sort of posh man in a green barber jacket approached us and he was like, "You guys are coming to my afters." And we were like,
whoa.
We were like, "I don't think so." And we were like, "Sell it to us." And he said, "Well, I mean, you know, I don't mean to sell my afters to you, but my house is worth seeing if you're in that kind of mood." Like, what?
This is so weird. Yeah.
And we got an Uber to his house. We got there first.
Oh my God. No.
And then we entered the house and he showed us around and he was a sculptor. And
that's
the house
it.
Was yeah. full of cracked and currently in process of being made busts.
Oh my God.
Yeah, not just like the breasts.
Yeah.
And it was wild. And then we went to his kitchen and there was a big plate of walnuts that you have to crack with a nut cracker.
What are you actually taking the piss? Are you making
it? Does sound made up.
It sounds made up, but yeah. It's not. And we stayed there for a couple of hours just sort of, I don't know, chatting shit. And then there was a woman with a snood sort of crawled over to my friend Jack and was like, "Do you have any ketamine?" And then we were like, it's our time to go.
Oh, what the? Why do I never get invited to the Ketty walnut after? It's full of freaks.
It's actually been a crazy week for stories in our household because we also saw some pretty wild things earlier in the week.
We've been...
What?
My boyfriend was over and we were sat at the kitchen table.
Me, Alice... For context, me and Alice live together.
Yeah.
We've all lived together at some stage.
At various points. But currently me and Emmeline live together. And yeah, we were just working from home. Pretty sure it was like a Thursday... middle of the day.
It was a Monday.
It was a Monday.
And I remember that because this is why I'm like, wow, that was a crazy thing to do on Monday.
Just working. And because we're like top floor of a flat, a lot of our windows, you can sort of see into other people's flats around us.
They crucially have floor to ceiling windows. So there is there is nothing left to the imagination. You can see pretty much.
Yeah.
You can really see into people's
lives. And you have quite a parallel social relationship with people that live opposite you in that way. And we definitely do with
these particular neighbors. Now we do, yeah.
Yeah, we could see the neighbors like fully, fully naked, like not a stitch on them.
Far out.
Going at it.
Fucking his girlfriend from behind.
From behind.
Like, it was like cartoon sex. It was like,
it was aggressive.
And then he sort of gestures for this woman to come forward. She's in a bra and no underwear.
That's
which
weird.
Which is also just an extreme image. Yeah. Like,
full
and
fanny.
She's, full fanny. Yeah.
And then they stand against the window and start fucking up against the window.
Full, like getting pounded
what,
against
like
the window.
Boobs, like,
No. So this is the thing. At one point, he whispers in her ear something presumably to do with like, let the people see. And she takes her bra off and pushes her tits
like
full like boobs against the glass. And because of the time of day, the sun was hitting them. Like they were also bathed in sunlight. We were like, do you think... Can they see us? Do they know we're watching?
Is surely that why... that's like a fetish for them.
It must
be.
Yeah, like, I don't know that they knew that we specifically were watching them, but they would have known that someone could have seen them. But it was crazy.
And also it was kind of hot.
And then we were all just stood there like, what do we do now?
What the hell?
It was
why
intense.
Have I got FOMO? I was not seeing that.
It was intense.
It was real. It was very... blatant. And now whenever is like working from ours,
he's got his fucking binoculars out.
He makes sure he sits in the spot on the kitchen table where you can see.
He is
directly into
disgusting pervert, your boyfriend, isn't he?
Proper little voyeur,
down bad, despicable character. And I've always said
that. Well, we've really gone on a tangent here.
Yeah, what is the episode
what's
actually about?
Yeah.
You've given us some notes. You sort of started shoehorning in the word jealousy, which I can see here on the sheet.
Yeah.
Tell us what the thesis is.
So it's a very, quite a short thesis today, because I want to explore jealousy as a key plot driver in literature.
Okay.
Specifically thinking about Othello to start with, because that is sort of like the text on jealousy, you know. And then we're going to be looking at how jealousy can drive plot as well in our own lives, because it is quite a kind of, I want to say, like it's an emotion that carries with it a lot of momentum,
yes,
and force,
yeah,
not always, often, most cases, not the good kind. So it's going to feel a little bit like group therapy, because when we're talking about times we've been jealous, and, you know, obviously, like, Othello is a very, very extreme case of that as a tragedy, as a literal Shakespearean tragedy. But then we are going to be looking for sort of solutions to jealousy in a book by Eve Babbitts. She has an essay on jealousy, which completely rewired my brain.
Ooh.
On like how I deal with that emotion. And I also have with me the sort of gospel for ethical non-monogamous people, The Ethical Slut, which has a whole chapter on jealousy as well. So
ooh,
I'm into it.
Sort of looking a little bit at like the theory and the history and our personal experiences of it. But to start with, I've got, because I think it's quite a difficult emotion to define.
Yeah.
Because it's such like a messy and intense and also quite fleeting feeling.
Yeah.
So the I don't know who wrote this, Jeanette Hardy and Dossie Easton are the authors of The Ethical Slut. And I got this book when I first started being in an open relationship with my ex. So I was like 21. And the only, it appears that the only chapter I read in this book that has annotations is the chapter on jealousy.
Interesting.
So I obviously read this like 4 or 5 years ago and I was like, that's what I need to, you know, lock down. And she has this really useful breakdown of what jealousy is. And she says, jealousy may be an expression of insecurity, fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, or feeling left out, not good enough, inadequate, or awful. And then she talks about how jealousy could be based on territoriality, mm-hmm. or competitiveness. But basically, there's a lot of different roots for it. And I underlined insecurity, fear of abandonment, and feeling left out.
Oh, no.
But it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting seeing my own annotations. But that's kind of useful to have in mind, you know, insecurity, fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, fear of feeling left out. Like, where does our jealousy actually stem from?
Yeah.
Have that in mind as we're sort of going through the episode and I guess like FFT, food for thought about, you know, your own experiences with the emotion.
Nice.
And then to open, I just want to, look at jealousy. We're not looking at solutions, just jealousy. And obviously Othello being like a seminal text.
Mm-hmm. The Green-Eyed Monster.
Exactly.
Where that phrase comes from.
So basically what happens is Othello is led to believe by Iago, the villain, the like Machiavellian villain, that his wife Desdemona is cheating on him with this guy Cassio, who I think also gets a promotion over Othello.
Okay.
And then basically Iago stirs the pot and feeds Othello's jealousy with like little lies, and it's all like little teeny tiny things, and these teeny tiny things result in Othello flying into a fit of rage and murdering his wife Desdemona.
Oh fuck.
Who is innocent, like she hasn't done anything.
Oh god. Okay.
So the quote in which the green-eyed monster as we know it comes from is from Act 3, Scene 3. So it's like right in the sort of midpoint of the play. And at this point, Othello is starting to spiral.
Yeah.
He's starting to crash out because he's really like starting to buy into this idea that Desdemona is having an affair.
Yeah.
And it's, "Oh, beware, my lord, of jealousy. It is the green-eyed monster which doth mock the meat it feeds on."
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I think the big thing about jealousy that I've been picking up on, and there's another quote in the same act, in the same scene, is that jealousy, it's such like an internal, I mean, obviously all emotions are internal, right? But like, I feel like it's something that we really, it often comes from within as well.
Yeah.
Like it's born within ourselves. Obviously it can be, you know, provoked. I don't want to gaslight us into thinking like, you know, jealousy's not real. It's all in your head.
Yeah.
But it is something that, and the more attention we pay to it, the bigger and stronger the monster becomes. Like, that's why, you know, he doth mock the meat it feeds on, because we become the own victims of our jealousy.
Yeah, because it can be a futile emotion. Yeah.
Well, like, what is the evolutionary purpose of jealousy? Because guilt, it's like rectifying your actions. You know, anger is often a response to stimulus, and it can give you like the energy that you need if you need to like sort something out or whatever. But from an evolutionary perspective, it's like what that quote says. It literally just feeds off you. It's like parasitic.
I have an answer. In The Ethical Slut, she talks about, she says, many people believe that sexual many people believe that jealousy is a natural part of individual and social evolution. But more recent theories suggest that it may date from about 8,000 years ago, when humans shifted from being hunting and gathering nomads to landed farmers, making the long-term control of land, families, and all the means of production much more important. So this is the scarcity mindset.
Okay.
You know, when you believe that a resource is scarce, such as love, and that's a big thing in like, this book, they talk about abundance versus scarcity and love and relationships.
Mm.
If you believe something to be scarce, it's so much more terrifying, the idea that that might be taken away from you.
Yeah.
It's self-detrimental sometimes, but it can drive occasionally positive competition, I guess. I don't know, like there are...
Like doing better?
Yeah, it's not a fully cooked thought in my brain, but I do think that in a light dosage, jealousy makes us aware of how we feel about something or someone, our self-perception.
Mm.
And it can make you, like, if I'm jealous of someone because they have, I don't know, a more fulfilling job than me, maybe that's going to help me strive towards getting a more fulfilling job myself. I think it's like, if you match jealousy with positive action, it can be a useful driver of, I mean, obviously in literature and plots, but in your own life of change. But it's a very fine balance, because if you tip too much into being jealous, it can be very self-destructive.
Yeah, 100%.
And ugly as a, you know, it's not, it's, I mean, it's an emotion that I really associate with being young, because I feel like there are less parameters on your emotional regulation. And when you when you're young and you're jealous about something, you express that. You know, if you're jealous that someone has a gold sparkly pen and you don't, or if you're jealous that someone got picked to be the certain role in whatever, I feel like you express that in a way that you have to learn to control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's quite a, I think it's an emotion that we associate with immaturity, petulance and childishness.
Yeah, it's not a compassionate feeling.
No.
Yeah. Which is interesting that it's often associated with young women as well. Yeah. In particular.
Yeah. I mean, so many, there are so many sort of iconic texts about young female friendship or sort of women to women that are based around jealousy.
Jackie Wilson, classic.
Jacqueline Wilson.
She's always written about female jealousy.
Oh, like jealousy of the best friend.
Simone de Beauvoir writes about it. Eleanor Ferrante, My Brilliant Friend, like her series is loosely about, you know, when you like love and admire someone so much that you're also simultaneously deeply jealous about what they represent in your life, and that weird entanglement of, well, one person ends and another person begins. I think it's really, you experience that a lot with female friendships when you're young,
because
you're taught to look at women and think, what do they have and how
that,
can I get it?
I don't have.
Yeah.
Personal question for the table. Sophie, you mentioned earlier that some people are born more jealous than others.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're more, and this is for Annalene as well.
I love you asking this. We know the answer.
More susceptible to the green-eyed monster. And I will also answer this as well.
Yes, I am. And it's something that I really hate about myself. Like, I don't really get jealous of my friends. I'm very genuinely like, I'm happy for them. I want the best for them. That doesn't mean that I'm like a better person than someone who does get jealous of their mates. I think it's just what the hand that you're given. But I do get jealous in relationships, and I've gone out with a string, as my grandma pointed out, cheers, a string of wonderful young men who have never cheated, never given me any reason to think that they were like playing the field or that their attention was turned elsewhere. And for whatever reason, there's just some caveman instinct that's just like, oh my God, their attention's being diverted. Like, what does that say about you? Like, where are you positioned in this? And I'm actually not like a very insecure person. I'm quite a confident person, which is why it just feels so, I don't know. I'm like, why have I not evolved out of this? So yeah. But you guys already knew that. You've heard me fucking banging on about it. But
it's interesting when you say it like that though. And yeah, I would reflect that you are a super confident person. It's interesting what within you makes you more. I think it's just hard being a woman not to have some feelings of jealousy thrust on you. I didn't like that phrasing.
Thrust.
Oh, my brain today.
Put onto you.
Do I get jealous? Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. But I'm not like, it doesn't run like as a constant in my mind and body. But if I'm put in a certain situations where I don't feel secure enough or someone hasn't helped me, like I experienced extreme jealousy in a previous relationship that I've never experienced in a relationship before. And it's not like I experience it equally with partners. And I think it was just a lack of feeling of security. It like fed and it fed and it festered within me. And it turned into, like green-eyed monster. I became definitely something that I am not by nature. And it helped me understand that there are certain things that make jealousy a lot worse, and not feeling secure or comfortable or confident is definitely one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, fucking facts on that. Like, I know if I feel like someone's pulling back or putting their attention elsewhere, that was, and again, like, I'm not confrontational in relationships. It was at that point that I would pick fights, yeah, because I think you want to pick a fight so that someone is kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, like, how, yeah, can I make this better? Yeah. And it's such like a bid for attention. So, yeah, and it was usually as a result of, like, me getting jealous, my partner reassuring me, and in the act of reassuring me,
you had the security that you needed in the first place.
Was getting what I wanted. But like I said, like, these are really, like, fantastic men that I was going out with. Like, I didn't have anything to worry about. So, mm-hmm, it's just, that's what I mean about the caveman brain.
I guess, Sophie, what you're pointing out there is, like, you're not really sure where the jealousy comes, yeah, from, because they've not necessarily given you a reason to be jealous.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the tricky things about jealousy. And Shakespeare wrote, "Trifles light as air are to the jealous confirmation strong as proofs of holy writ."
One more time for the people in the back.
Spitting. He was spitting.
Yeah, bars. Shakespeare, yeah, bars.
Yeah, because it's, you know...
Look, sorry, can we? I did actually mean that. Can we have it one more time? I just wanted to hear it from you.
Okay, right. You weren't just like,
one more time. No, okay. I wanted to take it in properly.
All right, okay. "Trifles light as air are to the jealous confirmations strong as proofs of holy writ."
Mm. Yeah.
So he's saying that, you know, jealousy, often when we're jealous, because in Othello, it's the handkerchief. That's the sort of, like, I guess, crux, the climax of the play is he finds a handkerchief, and it's Desdemona's handkerchief, and that handkerchief becomes proof that Desdemona is having an affair. Obviously, it's not just a handkerchief that Iago has placed or found away. I can't really remember, but something like that. Jealousy doesn't it's not a rational emotion, like, anything.
And that you can latch onto something small and trivial, and that can become the source of, and the confirmation of your feeling of jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's easy to, I guess, like, if it's like, I don't know, maybe he, like, takes a bit longer to text you back than normal, or the tone of a certain text, I think texts in particular for me are like a point of, yeah, like a trigger point. If, particularly, like, if I'm aware that my partner's going on a date with someone else, I really have to kind of, like, cap myself from over analyzing any text messages that I receive during or after, because I'll sort of get into that, like, well, he said this one word and, like, maybe that means XYZ, and it doesn't necessarily.
But you're in a total, like, different realm to me and Emily, and I don't think we could do an open relationship. I know for a fact I couldn't do it.
Yeah, my
it would tear me to pieces.
Because
of the jealousy, I'd be like, what if, you know, I don't know, what if it's better?
Mm.
Or also, like, I don't know. I think it is, like, an inherently territorial feeling of being, like, and also, like, you know, I'm monogamy pilled.
So. We all are.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We all are.
Yeah.
And it does take a lot of unlearning, and definitely, like, when I was... God, when I was you guys remember when I arrived at uni and I was with my high school boyfriend,
the dental hygienist.
Yeah, that would really piss him off.
I was extremely jealous when I was in that relationship. Like, oh my god,
really?
I remember. I was, so, you know, I was 19 and not very good at regulating my emotions, because who is as a teenager? And he was obviously in Newcastle, and because the Oxford term started later than most unis.
Yeah.
So I remember him having his freshers week before I'd left to go to uni.
Oh, that's tough.
And, you know, and then when I did arrive, and that was tough in and of itself. And then when I did arrive at Oxford, I did not enjoy freshers week at all. I had a horrible time. Well, and
I will say that of all the situations ever in life that will make you jealous, having separate freshers weeks with your partners, I can only imagine to be, I've not gone through it,
but because you're like 19,
only imagine that that's the worst. And what I can attest to, because I've done it myself, that a really difficult thing in terms of situations that increase jealousy is being long distance.
Mm. Oh,
and
my
that
God.
Is something which is really difficult to get a grip on. I struggled massively with that. And so I know you're saying that, like, oh, you were really, really jealous and whatever, but that to me is a pretty hellish scenario.
I'm quite like, yeah, like for a younger woman that I was, and I was also not doing well. I had some health issues and stuff during my first, well, from 14 to 20, I had some health issues. So I wasn't very well. And I remember, and this is maybe like the last time I can think of that I was really jealous, and like the jealousy, like the green-eyed monster, like reared its ugly head inside me. And it was a trifle as light as air, because it was a picture of the dentist with his housemate, who was a woman, in the club. And he had his arm over her shoulders.
Yeah.
Nothing untoward. Also, he was a lovely man. He would never, ever, ever, ever have cheated on me. We've been together for 2 years. Never gave me any reason to doubt him. Like, he was a good Christian boy, literally. Good Christian dentist boy.
You love a Christian.
I do, weirdly, isn't it? Yeah. What's that about? But I remember seeing that image and just breaking down in tears.
Oh,
like,
I
was so upset. And I think I must have messaged him. Fuck no, it's probably something terrible and very embarrassing. But I think I must have messaged him. And then I ran up to like one of my friend's rooms. And I was just like, I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I just spiraled.
Yeah. And the issue was probably that you missed him.
Yeah.
Or that you shouldn't have been together.
Well,
also valid. We broke up
because
crucially,
he did love dentistry more than you.
Yeah, crucially, yeah.
Oh, that
so
was
really,
so bad.
The
jealousy was real.
The real third party was not his housemate. He was very nice to me when I met her.
Yeah.
It was his fucking degree.
The other woman was a root canal.
Literally.
It's bleak, that.
I think this is a good opportunity now that we've sort of aired our, you know, unless you guys have any stories of jealousy that you wish to share.
The only like one that jumps straight to mind is it was just like when I was at uni, I was slightly weirdly obsessed with this guy, and we had a very like knotty friendship and relationship. And just as he'd sort of set it into the pathway of friends, which is a complicated thing, he started getting with this girl who was, you know, when you perceive someone to be the opposite of you, and I think often that's where that jealousy can stem from, just like sort of looked very different to me, had very different interests to me.
Well, they have something you can't have.
Yeah, it just has
inherently
like a totally different vibe.
Yeah.
And that was, I definitely felt jealous of her in that situation. And if anything, I don't know if it was like the inherent situation, it was just kind of like what she represented in my brain, nothing to do with her or herself. I actually drunkenly pulled her over at a party, and
that's
a story for another time.
But
she was absolutely lovely and very sweet.
She was a nice girl
about the whole thing. Yeah. But yeah, that to me is something that quickly comes to mind of being a kind of like juvenile jealousy that carried me into my adulthood.
Yeah. I think mine is always if my partner's being touchy-feely with another, like, because all of my friends are beautiful and interesting, smart, funny women, it's like you can't be like, oh well, he's just hanging out with, you know, with my dud friend. It's like you know, like, but basically, like, yeah, I think that's when I'm just like, oh, like, you know, and I'm quite similar to my friends. So I'm like, it's very feasible that if you'd met this friend first, you would have been attracted to them.
I felt that before.
So again, it's always like doing that like fucking DIY CBT where you're like, what's the root cause of this thought? What's the trigger? What are you actually stressing out about?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Alice, back to you. Where are we moving to next?
We're moving into Eve Babbitt's.
Okay. I'm not familiar with her, but I know you guys are huge fans.
No.
Yeah.
So how do I even describe Eve Babbitt's? Maybe you can do a better job since you interviewed Lily Annalick recently.
I had the real pleasure recently of interviewing Lily Annalick for London Magazine. She's a contributing editor, I believe, at Vanity Fair. is also kind of Eve Babbitt's guru. And she was the one that kind of reintroduced a lot of readers to Eve. She'd gone quite under the radar in the time that she was alive. And Lily did this piece. She kind of became friends with Eve during Eve's later life and wrote this amazing article for Vanity Fair about speaking to her and her work. And it kind of set off this like mini revolution for a lot of readers to do with Eve. And most recently, she published a book called Didion and Babbitt's, about Joan Didion and Eve Babbitt's friendship. And I was speaking to her about that book. And the thing that that text revolves around is a letter that Lily found in Eve's possessions after she passed away. It was a letter that Eve had addressed to Joan Didion, but had never sent her, saying, "Could you write what you write if you weren't so tiny, Joan?"
What?
It's a catchy and thing to say.
Essentially, well, it's just an interesting thing on jealousy, because obviously we're going to bring up Eve's being having solutions to that, but she wasn't beyond it either. And it was this friendship is one that was defined by two women who represented very different things. Yeah. It was like Madonna versus whore. Eve was a very sexually liberated, young, sort of like Dionysian photographer initially, coming up in Hollywood, who wanted to make it as a more serious writer, but who did not want to be a sort of serious person. And Joan Didion was a very measured, sort of doctrined, accurate journalist and writer of the kind of New York scene, who then later moved to LA to write plays with her husband. And the two were kind of at odds with each other. But Eve Babbitt is a great person to look to for questions on sex, morality, jealousy, because she's just such an interesting and unicorn figure. And I'd recommend reading that interview with Lily Alec, because she has some crazy and cool things to say about those women.
Okay. Yeah.
Very, very cool women.
Like, I'm sold.
Seminal text is, I think the work she's most known for is Sex and Rage, which is autofiction. And then this is Black Swans, is one of her later anthologies of essays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like creative nonfiction, these. But the opening essay in this is on jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is interesting that that's the first in this book.
Yeah.
But basically, she echoes a lot of what we've been talking about in terms of what Shakespeare was writing about, as jealousy being this sort of quite intangible, quite slippery emotion that can kind of seemingly be born in a vacuum and then destroy everything. Because she writes that how a lot of her most articulate friends, the wisest and most worldly, who've even managed to learn from their experiences, none of them have been able to expound on jealousy at length. Like, no one's able to pin it down.
Interesting.
And she talks a lot about how it's such a fleeting feeling, because she says, you know, because jealousy sometimes seems like a critical condition. Like, you feel like you're going to die. And then something can happen, a voice of reason can intercede, and the whole thing can vanish like the morning dew.
Oh, so true.
Like, it can just, and you're like, oh, I was being a bit silly, wasn't I? Because
you feel mortified after.
Literally when you said that, the only scene that came to mind is that ridiculous scene in Bridget Jones where she thinks that her Mr. Darcy is having an affair with Rebecca Gillies.
Oh, yeah.
The sort of young, hot lawyer. And then she finds out that Rebecca Gillies is gay has a crush on her. And suddenly she's like, and, you know, the sky's clear. And, like, the music comes on. And it's like, she's fine.
Oh, my God. Incredible.
That's actually such a good, like, it's exactly.
Yeah.
Because you sort of, like, create these, like, narratives in your head. That, you know, someone's...
Yeah, she's imagining that they're texting, like, sleeping together, and all this is going on, and then it's like, oh, everything's cool.
Yeah.
Don't worry about me. Don't mind me. Everything's fine.
Joke.
And I think that's what's so tricky about it, is I think because we almost, like, forget as soon as we've resolved the jealousy.
Yeah.
Because also it's such an uncomfortable feeling. Like, we want to get away from it as quickly as possible.
Because it makes your skin crawl as well. Because also some... some deep-rooted part of your brain knows that you're being fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And, like, the logical and emotional brains are kind of at war. And, like, you do have that, the mortifications waiting in the back of it.
Because jealousy is really hard to contain. Like, it's really hard to feel it and not put it on something.
Yeah.
Like, I know that before, like, if I've been with a partner, you want to kind of, like, get rid of it, and you feel like one of the ways to get rid of it is to act on it. But, like, acting on it, that's often, like, makes it a lot worse.
Yeah.
It's really toxic cycle.
This is exactly what Babbitt and what, I keep forgetting their names, Hardy and Easton address. That, so the paragraph that I read that I was like, oh, that kind of helped me get to grips with jealousy was, it's actually not from Eve Babbitt herself. She's talking to a friend who's not named. But this friend was part of a group called Recovery.
Yeah.
And I think it probably was like a bit of a CBT type kind of space for anxiety management. And she says, the whole idea of the system is that you don't do deep analysis on the cause. You just work on the symptoms, which is great when you apply it to jealousy, because often the cause is a trifle light as air.
Yeah.
And like, how much can you analyze that really?
Yeah.
And then she goes on to say, like for obsessions, a wife who's jealous of her husband and who calls him 25 times a day at work, while in recovery, she'd be encouraged to call him only 15 times a day, and then 10 times, and then 3 times, until finally the obsession will have nothing to feed on, because an obsession needs to be nourished with acts and deeds.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So, so are we saying that jealousy is a habit?
Almost, yeah.
Interesting.
I can see that. Yeah. Well, that's what CBT would say. It's a habit. It's a brain pattern.
Yeah.
That you're it's hardwired. That you just have to rewire. Yeah.
And sort of sit through it, and then, like, I guess this is corroborated in The Ethical Slut, where basically, so like the whole chapter on jealousy, you know, talks about what it is, and obviously in the context of E&M, ethical non-monogamous relationships. It's quite like a present emotion. Like, you have to, like, really tackle jealousy head on all the time.
Yeah.
So this is a lengthy chapter, and I've underlined a lot, which is interesting to look at. I was like, oh. But obviously it helped. So when she talks about, or when they talk about disempowering your jealousy, similar to what you were saying, Em, and what Babbitt was saying, is that you have to make a commitment to not act on it. And they say that as soon as you refuse to act on your jealousy, you become free to start reducing the amount of power you let it have over you. And basically, you have to sort of like feel it, let it run through you. Again, this kind of like CBT shit where it's like, imagine your emotion is a cloud and you've got to like let it pass over your mind. So essentially what they're saying is you've got to just sit and feel it and not act on it. And obviously the instinct for me anyway would be, you know, my partner's on a date, my instinct is to text them, how's your date going?
You don't want to know.
But I don't want to know. Or maybe I do want to know. No, I don't want to know, because it's like a fucking scab.
Yeah.
You know, the more you pick it, the more it bleeds.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, texting your partner every half an hour to see if they've gone back to the other person's place yet, like, are they just fucking raw dogging, like, who the fuck knows.
God. Me and Sophie are like, cannot compute.
Yeah.
I would combust, I'm afraid. Yeah.
I mean, it is a lot, and I think definitely, like, in my first open relationship I experienced more jealousy than I do in this relationship. What
I just remember being at university and you shagging someone you'd met on a night out, and I ran into your boyfriend at the time, and I was like, where's Alice? And he was like, oh, she's shagging some girl. And I was like, what have you been doing? Because obviously he was on campus and he didn't have anywhere else to go, and he'd just been climbing trees in the university campus.
It's a great way to deal with your jealousy.
But he was a really unjealous person, so I think he was like, yay, I have time to climb trees. He was like totally unfazed by it.
So my closing sentiment, unless either of you have anything more that you wish to add.
I think mine is the way that I try and cope with my jealousy is if there's like a certain woman in a partner's life that they have a close relationship with, and maybe that's causing some of those ugly feelings to like rise up, is I always just try and befriend the woman. And then when I feel like she's my pal, I'm like, ah, I see why you like her so much. Like,
yeah, killing with kindness is good.
Like, she's super interesting. She's awesome. I'm enjoying hanging out with her. We can all hang out as a group. And then that always takes the sting out of it, because it's like, this is sick. I'm not jealous anymore. And I have this really cool new friend.
That's beautiful. I deal with jealousy by staying single.
Also
worked,
valid.
It's worked great for me so far. Yeah. Haven't had any issues recently. Not at all.
Is that
my hot take?
That's Emily's hot take. If it works, it works.
My hot take is that if Othello were written today, Othello would have had access to the ethical slut, and him, Desdemona, and Cassio could have formed a nice MMF thruple, and no one would have died, and it wouldn't have been a tragedy.
And handkerchiefs might still be in fashion.
Yeah, huge. An excellent closing statement, I think, Alice. Thanks so much for presenting. That was super interesting. I feel like I learned a lot.
Cool. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thanks to the Roundhouse for having us.